Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. Sean Cantwell, your local alternative, Solid State Radio. And today is going to be a little bit of a rough one. Yeah, it's our last Overreaction Monday slash Lions postmortem of 2023-24. And this one, man, it's a bit of a heartbreaker to say the least. Because you knew going in, you felt like, I know a lot of people did, like the Lions were going to inevitably lose this. And I know I'm supposed to feel like, oh, well, hey, it's all right. You're playing with house money. They did all the things that you wanted to see them do at the start of this season and then a few extra ones. And yet, somehow, that doesn't necessarily make it any easier to come in here after the Lions took a 17-point lead into the half against San Francisco and promptly blew it and blew, quite frankly, their shot of winning a Super Bowl in 2024. Now, I know that sounds insane to even suggest that, but you watched that game yesterday, by which I mean the AFC title game, one that we all thought Baltimore was destined to win, because of course they were. So we thought. Until Zay Flowers fumbled the ball on the goal line. So close to a Ravens touchdown. And it seemed like, okay, they're going to truly secure their destiny here and do this thing. Lamar Jackson connects with him for 54 yards. Flowers gets flagged for taunting. But then coming up after that, it looked like he plunged into the egg zone, except for the fact that, well, fumbled the ball. Ball's punched out just shy of the end zone. And that ends up being a huge component in that team losing and setting up the KC-Detroit matchup that all of us, I feel like, thought was inevitable once the Lions got to this point. Like, if you were going to make it to the Super Bowl, it was going to be against the team you face in Week 1 and beat at their home stadium. And honestly had a pretty good chance to beat them in a neutral site. And I'll admit, I didn't like your chances if you did get there against Baltimore. This team is not historically particularly good against mobile quarterbacks. And they smoked you pretty severely earlier in the season. KC, I felt like you could have held your own, especially the way the Lions were firing in the first half last night. Instead, you sit here, and it's hard to not feel a bit disappointed at what could have been, certainly. We'll get into the game. We'll get into the costly plays that ultimately wasted that opportunity. We'll talk about a little bit about Dan Gamble because there's just no way of talking about this game without getting into the decisions made by that man, mostly in the second half of this game. But, oh man, today's going to be a rough one, certainly for a lot of you. I know it is for me. You were 30 minutes away from going to the one place the Lions have never been, and you promptly trashed any opportunity to do so. We'll talk about it coming up. It's Happy Hour. Your local alternative is Solid State Radio. Allison James, your local alternative, Solid State Radio. Let's just get into it, shall we? The Lions, last night, that game, and some of the calls during that game. There's no way to talk about this game without getting right off the jump into Dan Gamble, because as we always kind of knew, it would end with this team. You live by Dan Gamble, you die by Dan Gamble. And it was always kind of fated, really, that this season for this team was going to come down to one of those aggressive, go-for-it, fourth-down calls or something of that sort, and was always ultimately going to mean the difference between moving on and having your season come to a arguably premature end. But of the play calls that were made, the fourth-down calls to go for it, I don't necessarily hate most of them. I'll start, though, with one that arguably a time where they didn't go for it where you could make the argument that they should have. That being the end of the first half. So you're at the San Francisco 3-yard line. And you've been just racking up points on San Fran this entire first half. You're up 21-7. There is an argument to be made that there, instead of going for the 21-yard field goal from Michael Badgley, and it did seem like even for a moment Campbell was a bit hesitant in making that call, one could argue that the right decision there is to go for the touchdown. Go and get those points. Just completely run up the score on San Fran going into the half. Make them come back from 21 down instead of just 17 down. Put yourself up fully by 3 touchdowns there. San Fran at the time looked pretty gassed. They hadn't had time really to make a whole lot in the way of adjustments, and you were basically imposing your will on them at that point in the game. There is arguably the place where you go for it, you get the touchdown there, and then San Fran just is never able to come back from that, and you end up winning in the end. There, I could actually see that maybe that's where Dan Gamble should have been Dan Gamble. Instead, we have two instances in the second half where, of course, everyone has just decided they're going to let them have it over these. And those are the what ultimately ended up being a turnover on downs in the third quarter. Fourth and two with the San Fran 28. Ultimately, the pass that Josh Reynolds would end up dropping. I got to say, I don't have a problem with that call. I think at that point in the game, you've been doing quite well moving the ball. San Fran hasn't really started the comeback at this point yet. I think going for it there was the right idea. Now, Josh Reynolds not being able to hold on to the ball there, inexcusable, unacceptable, not okay with it. That one, I don't put on Dan Campbell necessarily. We go to the fourth quarter. You're 4th and 3 on the San Francisco 30. Dan Campbell ultimately elects to go for it. Comes up and completes Amon-Ra St. Brown. And that one, it's one that you could really argue either way on. Like, the analytics barely say to go for it, but they do ultimately say to go for it. Versus Michael Badgley, who is only about a 78% clip at making field goals from 40 to 49 yards. And at this point, the plays that really have kind of turned this thing were what ended up being a 51-yard catch for Brandon Ayuk on a pass that, frankly, should have been picked off, and you just got one hell of a bounce off a guy's face, and then the fumble by Jahmyr Gibbs. I get you have to stop the bleeding at some point. You've watched Josh Reynolds now make 2 critical drops, and, of course, the Gibbs fumble, and you got to do something to get some points on the board. But alternately here, you've gotten this far by being that gutsy team on fourth down. Bringing on the field goal unit, now I feel like it kind of takes the morale out of the room, really. Like, you've been so aggressive on fourth down, this feels like a signal at a critical time at that point that you don't have faith in the guys that brought you there. And you're something like 17 for 20 on fourth down, going for it for 3 yards or less on the season, which is more accurate and more successful than Michael Badgley has been at kicking field goals at that distance all year. If you got Justin Tucker out there kicking for you, or Matt Prater, or, you know, one of the seemingly long line of Lions kickers that were actually good, yeah, okay, I can see how you'd swing that in favor of just take the points. I'm ultimately fine, given what we know, given the circumstances at the time, and knowing now after, I'm fine with the decision to go for it on fourth down on both of those. I'm really kind of actually a little bit disappointed that you didn't go for it earlier when you were really just laying it on. You had your boot really like on their neck. You had your foot on the gas pedal, man. Like, you had everything going let's just keep racking up points now because you never know what adjustments they're going to make at the half. That's almost more of a concern than them actually going for it on those other two fourth down opportunities. Now, my problem with all of this, and it's something that really came back to bite the Lions ultimately, the last drive, third and goal at the 1 yard line. You have 1:05 left, and you have all of your timeouts. If San Fran gets the ball back, you can at least stop the clock, force them to punt, and actually have some time left to come back down the field, get your field goal, and send it to OT. Instead, Montgomery runs it. They end up having to burn their first timeout. They get the touchdown, but now San Fran has the ball left with 56 seconds on the clock, and they only need to waste a couple seconds before ultimately taking a couple knees and sealing this thing out. Instead of an opportunity where, had you played your cards right and managed to get the stop you needed to get, you could get the ball back and still make it downfield enough to potentially send this thing to OT at that point. And that's what I don't find coming up a lot. Like, all the talk has been about the two instances of going for it in the fourth quarter, especially the second one where they're down by three. But that, to me, that decision to run it there and then have to burn a timeout instead of throwing it and either throwing it incomplete or getting out of bounds and stopping the clock, which was critical at that point without having to burn a timeout, that sealed this thing. That felt like it sealed it a lot more than any of those prior decisions did. And you'd like to hope that that last play call was a little bit of a wake-up for Campbell to manage the clock at the end of the game a little bit better, something which he hasn't normally been terrible at. I mean, you could make an argument for the other game against Tampa where they didn't run out the clock like they were supposed to, and Todd Bowles just decided to quit and not take advantage of it. But this sort of thing, that can't happen, and I think Campbell has to kind of realize that and learn from that going forward. The lesson I don't want to see taken from this is that doing the Dan Gamble thing is necessarily the wrong way to do things, because it would appear this season it's worked out for you more often than not. It's what got you here. Like, Dan Campbell being Dan Gamble is arguably the reason that you were in a position to be 30 minutes away from playing in your first Super Bowl in franchise history. You don't go back on that now just because it's the NFC title game. Now is not the time to start playing conservatively. I don't think that that's ultimately what doomed you in this thing. Because make no mistake, you were in this until pretty much the end, and it's that third down play that I think sealed your fate. Because now you're relying on an onside kick, which has a success rate of not even 5% this season. Like, I'm talking less than 5% league-wide. Like, it's just no longer really a play that you can necessarily have any sort of faith in, like, other than there are Hail Marys that have a better chance of converting than onside kicks do. It doesn't really work, and you put yourself in a situation where you had to rely on that, where you had no other option but to hope that that happened, that you executed that, what is the lowest of all low percentage plays, and your entire season basically hinged on that when it didn't have to be that way. For that, I will absolutely criticize Dan Campbell all day on that. The going for it, the being aggressive on fourth downs, I can't. I can't honestly sit here and tell you that that's the reason you lost that game last night. Plenty more to do. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. Here is Royal Otis, their new one, heading for the door. Blink 182, your local alternative Solid State Radio. And I feel like there's something here I have to address. Thankfully, I haven't heard it from a whole lot of Lions fans here locally, though there's always a few, basically the people who refuse to admit that they were wrong about the guy, who just can't stand to admit that maybe they weren't at quite as prescient as they thought they were when it came to this guy. I am, of course, talking about one Jared Goff. And it was unfortunate enough to come across a stupid Rams fan page going off about Goff. And now you know why Sean McVay traded Jared Goff to Detroit to get Matthew Stafford. And then just going on the comments about how it's apparently Goff's fault that they lost. Oh, he did nothing in the second half. The running backs aren't scoring in a big game. The team's not carrying him. He's just there. Like, you can tell these people, I mean, they clearly have no knowledge of football. I mean, which is fair. I mean, you somehow got gift-wrapped two football teams about, what, 5 years ago? Or seven, whatever the hell it was. And you're just now, like, learning what football is. But to blame Jared Goff for what happened last night is a level of stupid that I can't imagine, right up there with the people calling for Hendon Hooker to start next year. Like, are you people out of your effing minds? Goff had arguably his best game since he came here last night. None of what happened had anything to do with Goff not being on his game. I mean, he made some good throws. He had several deep shots downfield, which went quite well when you don't have, you know, defenders just bearing down on you. And honestly, there are some places where normally he would have been sacked that he actually still managed to get some pretty decent throws off. 25 completions on 41 attempts, threw for a touchdown, 273 yards. He absolutely did enough to keep you in this game up to the end. Not his fault that Josh Reynolds couldn't catch that pass on 4th-and-2. Not his fault that, well, Jahmyr Gibbs fumbled the ball. Like, all the things that went wrong offensively are not necessarily things that were Jared Goff's fault. Quite honestly, I'm impressed that he only managed to take 2 sacks on the night and didn't throw a pick either. More than you can say for the other quarterback in this matchup. Honestly, I'll go and put it out there. I'm fine if the Lions decide this offseason to sign Goff to an extension. Because honestly, it's not like there's any other particularly good options out there. It amazes me, really, how many people have been calling for, oh, move on from Goff after this season, and go and get who? I'm serious. Find me a good QB who's actually a free agent this offseason that you would want to bring in. Sam Darnold? No thanks. Tyrod Taylor? Jacoby Brissett? I'm honestly, quite frankly, not interested in Kirk Cousins. And I don't think it matters because he's going to go end up signing with Minnesota because I'm pretty sure they've realized that in their attempts to replace him while he's been out injured, that nothing they have is better than what they've got. And honestly, there's nothing out in the free agent market that's better than what you've got. Just floors me, man. Just the disrespect this guy still seems to get because people are just unwilling to admit that the guy was better than they wanted to admit to when he came here. Or because they're bitter that, oh, you didn't get it done for you in L.A. It amazes me, but it does not honestly at all surprise me. Here is Michigander, Solid State Radio. Noah Kahn at your local alternative Solid State Radio. Kind of wanted to get this in real quick. It looks like both of your coordinators are going to be looking at other job interviews this week. Aaron Glenn and Ben Johnson are both interviewing with, it looks like, the Washington Commanders on Tuesday. Johnson's also going to interview with the Seahawks later on Monday in Detroit. Now it seems like Mike McDonald, the defensive coordinator for the Ravens, is most likely to get one of those two jobs. And as of right now, it seems pretty likely that Johnson ends up getting the other one. Now, I tend to think no matter what happens, Aaron Glenn's going to be back next season as DC. As far as Johnson goes, for one, I'm not entirely sure it's a particularly smart move for him to go off and be head coach. I mean, he's still kind of learning at the OC thing. While he has done some great things here, I'm not necessarily certain that for him it would be the best decision to go jump at the Washington gig immediately, nor that it would be in Washington's best interest to pick him up because he's the hot offensive coordinator right now. And maybe I'm just saying this because there's still some unfinished business left to be had here and things I'd like to see get done here before we start losing guys. And also losing other guys on the staff, because you got to imagine that one of like Scotty Montgomery or Hank Fraley, at least, is probably going with Johnson to Washington if he were to get that gig. So that's a lot of rebuilding that suddenly has to be done. But do keep in mind, he also was in for the Carolina gig last year and ultimately pulled his name out of the running there to run it back with Detroit. Now, admittedly, that probably has a little something to do with the fact that Carolina has looked like a dumpster fire basically since Ron Rivera got the boot and really since David Tepper took over. And honestly, arguably even before that. But I, at this point, I have to say I fully expect that Johnson probably is gone because it seems like he is the favorite for the Commanders job. It doesn't really seem like they have any interest or any intent on not having him take that gig. And unfortunately, that is just the reality sometimes of being a successful team in the National Football League. When other struggling teams need to find the guy to turn their program around, they're going to start poaching your guys. Honestly, though, it's a lot better having that to deal with than what the Lions have had for many years, in that everyone's damaged goods once they leave Detroit and they don't get gigs again. I will take this all day, every day. Stone Roses at your local alternative solid state radio. Another, just a quick thought, and then we'll get right back into tunes and such. CJ Gardner-Johnson. Look, I loved how just excited he was about this team and wanting to be here and all that. But last couple weeks, I think I've seen enough. Between the whatever feud he was having with Baker Mayfield the week of the Tampa game, and then with this going in, getting a 15-yard penalty that really did not need to be taken early on in this game, and then going and waving bye to the Niner fans at halftime, I feel like I've seen enough. Going and taunting the opposing team fans when you don't have this game by any means in hand. There's still 30 minutes of football to be played against arguably the best team in the league, inarguably the best team in the NFC. Yeah, you may as well wave bye to this team this offseason, man. You're sublime. Solid State Radio. Silver Sun Pickups at your local alternative Solid State Radio. What's going on? Sean Campbell here. And am I the only one right now who really doesn't have that much interest in watching this year's Super Bowl after what went down last night? I mean, maybe this is just me being overreactionary still here on a Monday immediately after watching a heartbreaker of a loss for my team. But I feel like I don't really have a great interest in watching San Fran, the team that just beat us, go out there and play a Kansas City team that I also am not at this point a huge fan of. Like, they're probably going to go out there and they're most likely going to win 2 weeks from now. San Fran very much has shown some glaring weaknesses in the last couple weeks, and KC at this point just feels inevitable, and we're going to have to hear all about, you know, the famous people who are hanging around said team and deal with various members of Pat Mahomes' family being obnoxious as they do, and of course all the stuff with Travis Kelce and you know who. Which, I mean, that's all that sort of thing is entirely on really the networks here. Like, I'm not mad at people for showing up to support their significant others or family members or whatever at football games. I just do I necessarily need constant coverage on it in every sphere of the media? Also, no. And it really almost makes you realize how good you had it when it was just Jackson Mahomes acting like an effing moron every week. I mean, I'll still more than likely be watching the game because we do still do a show where we talk about sports, and I'm going to have to discuss it and be able to talk competently about it the following Monday. And I'm certainly going to be at a Super Bowl party of some sort somewhere because, I mean, it's still a socially acceptable excuse to go out and party on a Sunday night. But I don't really have a vested interest in this one. I don't really want to see either of these two teams win. I feel like very much like the meme I'd come across after last night's game where rooting interest is, you know, Kansas City is like right in Kansas and Missouri, San Fran for California, and the rest of the country is just like, I hope they both lose. Can both these teams lose? That's kind of where I'm at right now. I don't really have a vested interest in either one of these teams. I don't really want to see either one of them do well. I'm sick and tired of it being San Fran or KC seemingly every year. Even if I can't admittedly sit here and acknowledge that Pat Mahomes is going to end up ultimately taking Tom Brady's place as the greatest quarterback of all time, especially if he gets a third Super Bowl before he's 30. I mean, at that point, he's certainly on pace for Brady's numbers. I mean, at that point, Brady has been to 3 Super Bowls and won all of them. At that point, Mahomes will have been to 4 Super Bowls and won 3 of them. I think there's no doubt in my mind he's going to end up being the best ever to do it by the time he's done. But not going to lie, I feel like I'm not alone on this one. I feel like for a lot of people, though, that's going to be, all right, right, we've seen it, we get it, we know you're great, let's let someone else in there for a change. I mean, no doubt a lot of people would have been pulling for Lamar Jackson to finally get a Super Bowl ring and be able to cast off this reputation of being a playoff choke artist that he has. And right, wrong, or indifferent, that is something he's going to have to live with until he finally comes through and wins the big one. That's just kind of how it's going to be. He certainly didn't acquit himself well yesterday. And this was your best opportunity. Like, if you made it to the Super Bowl, like, you were going to be the favorite. Really, I feel like the AFC team was going to win it regardless of the four teams that were remaining in this thing. But that being said, you had your best chance to finally actually do it, and now you're losing a bunch of guys to free agency. Two of your starting O-linemen, six defensive starters, a couple running backs, and a couple of your veteran wide receivers are all free agents. Like, you could have finally shut up the doubters who have been just calling him out for years and just couldn't do it. So this matchup, I feel like, very much is the one that people are least excited about. We talked a little bit. I brought up those stats and the polls from last week on, I think, Thursday or Friday show, that this is the matchup that absolutely nobody wanted. And so, because of course it was, it's also the one that you're going to get, because that's just how the NFL works. Here's Death Cab for Cutie at Solid State Radio. That seems rather fitting. Blue October, and I hope you're happy. Your local alternative is Solid State Radio. A couple final thoughts, if I could, on the aftermath of this Lions season and where this team ultimately stands at the end of that and going forward and really everything else. So, if you would have told me at the start of this season that this team would have been 30 minutes away from playing in a Super Bowl with a lead against San Francisco, I probably would have told you you were back Guano Loco. I would not have believed that for a second. I would have been ecstatic. I feel like I would have been, honestly, in disbelief, quite frankly. If you would have told me we would have lost to San Fran in the NFC title game, and that's how the season would end, much the same. Would have been incredulous. Would not have believed you for a minute that's really where this team's going after what we've been through for so long with this franchise. Wouldn't have bought it for a moment. And would have been happier than I could have possibly expressed to even be in that position. I'm not exactly entirely feeling that way here in the present day. Mostly because those two things both ended up being true, that you were up with a lead over the Niners in the NFC title game and ultimately lost it. And you can't help but feeling like you had that opportunity to punch your ticket to the one place that no Detroit Lion has ever been and ultimately could not get it done. Sitting here right now, that's a rather difficult place to be at and to accept it and to be okay with it. And yet, that was nowhere near my list of expectations for this season. I honestly was happy to win a playoff game and be good with it. And finally feel like maybe the SOL curse, such as it is, was a thing of the past. Certainly after getting a second home playoff game and winning that, I would have believed it. And now, even with all that, even knowing how it ended up last night, I feel like I can't be disappointed with the way things turned out. Though I can certainly, I still find myself disappointed over the actual way that it played out, ultimately. I feel like I shouldn't be, but I still ultimately kind of am. In part because you never really know if you're going to make it back. Next year's not guaranteed by any means. You heard Dan Campbell say it after last night's game. Quote, this may have been our only shot. Do I think that? No. Do I believe that? No. However, I know how hard it is to get here. I'm well aware it's going to be twice as hard to get back to this point than it was last year. And he's absolutely right. I mean, it seems like you should be able to improve on what you did from a number of positions. Certainly, you can't send a worse defense out there than you did in 2023. And all the credit in the world to Aaron Glenn, a guy who we've at times have criticized, maligned, have said should be thrown out of town, fired out of a cannon, and so on and so forth. But he, quite frankly, got more out of a fairly thin bit of talent on defense than he had any possible right to. Your secondary was at times non-existent, and you had key guys who were missing for good chunks of the season, and your big free agent acquisitions ended up really being kind of disappointing looking at you, Sutton. Or just flat out going stupid, doing stupid things, and getting a little too cocky or confident looking at you, CJ Gardner-Johnson. But in all reality, we knew this defense never really had a great deal of talent, and it was going to honestly take a miracle to make this thing look competent a lot of the time. And hopefully we'll have him back here to run it back next year, ideally with a little bit better defense, hopefully some wise free agent signings and some quality drafting, maybe another cornerback or two, maybe another edge rusher opposite Aiden Hutchinson. That'd be great. And you certainly can't take anything away from the skilled players on the offensive side of the ball that got you here. Last night, for as much as a lot of things did not go right, a lot of players really screwed up in key moments, last night was the game that you've been waiting for since Jameson Williams was drafted here. Like, that was the game. Like, he finally did the thing that you drafted him so highly in the first place to do and stuck with him through injuries and him being an idiot and gambling at team facilities and all the other things. Like, last night you finally saw what it is that this team saw in him when they drafted him. Outside of the fumble, Jahmyr Gibbs, the second half of this season, he has shown why you drafted him as highly as you did. And really the combination between him and David Montgomery has very much paid dividends for the running game in this team. You have a tight end who honestly is leaps and bounds better than the one that you traded away to Minnesota that you thought was going to be your franchise guy and found him in the second round of the draft. And quite frankly, despite what any of the haters that didn't like the trade when it happened might say here, you've got a franchise QB too. A guy that I'd like to see you keep around for at least the medium term, if not long term. A guy who absolutely, I would say, deserves the extension that is most likely coming his way. Because, come on, people, they're not going to start Hendon Hooker next year. That's not happening. But really, most importantly, though, you feel like you finally have a front office that gets it, that can actually identify talent really throughout the draft and pick out guys in free agency that fit the culture they're trying to build. And honestly, I think you got a coach here that completely gets it too. The occasional failed gamble aside, Dan Campbell has done, he's coming here and done the one thing that so many coaches over the years have completely failed to do with this football team. He's actually changed the culture in an entirely meaningful way here in Detroit. He's not coached a bunch of guys who don't want to be here or here on rookie deals and will be gone as soon as they hit free agency, or guys that just want a place to rest up before they go and try and get with a real team next season. He's got people actually buying in to what he's trying to build. And that's something we haven't seen a whole lot of over my years of following this team and covering this team here. We've watched a lot of guys try and ultimately get, well, for lack of a better term, lionized. Jim Caldwell certainly comes to mind. Steve Mariucci comes to mind. Marty Mornaweg certainly comes to mind. Like, guys, you just kind of, as coaches, kind of give up and kind of settle into what this team was and had always been. Few guys attempted to change it. You'd argue Jim Schwartz tried to change it when he got here, and you could argue the team got maybe a little too reckless under what he was trying to do. Matt Patricia seemingly attempted to install the Patriot way here in Detroit. As it turns out, basically pissed off everybody in the locker room and made them all quit on him. And the ones that didn't outright quit on him, well, he ran him out of town or got him traded because he didn't like him. Didn't like him actually being any kind of presence in the locker room. Saw that a bunch. Now it seems like you have a guy who comes in, who has come in, and has got guys wanting to play for him, wanting to be here, wanting to run through a brick wall for the MF-er. In a way, it kind of harkens back to the old going to work Pistons. I mean, you can't really necessarily cross sports with these kinds of things, but you go back to an 04 team, guys who were all entirely good at what they do and decent players, if not necessarily superstars, but that weren't wanted at other places, who came here and built something that ultimately won them a title and arguably should have won them too, because they completely bought into the program. And I feel like you're seeing that here. And I feel like you're seeing something that's going to last maybe even beyond, well beyond this season, whether it's the same guys that come back next year or not. The guys that come here are going to be guys who ultimately do fit into that, who do ultimately buy into the program, because they've seen now that the program actually works. A lot of guys in the past who tried this weren't able to get that buy-in ultimately because there were no results really to show for it. Now you have that. Over this last year and a half, you actually realistically have that. This is no longer a team that just quits once they're down in mid-season. Not a team that quits when they're down at halftime of a crucial game. These just aren't things that are happening anymore here. And if they're going down, they're at least going down swinging. Certainly Dan Campbell's right. There's no guarantees in this league. This may be your best shot you ever have at a Super Bowl here. May have been your only shot. But watching the steps this team has made, the leaps and bounds, really, over the last year and a half here, I don't tend to think that it is going to be their only shot. Happy hour here at Solid State Radio. That's about do it for me. Thank you all for indulging me this afternoon. Stick around, a full hour of local original music comes your way next at a little show we like to call Solid State Sessions. All being well, talk to you tomorrow at 3.